This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Hello, and welcome to Mountain News and World Report. I'm your host, Rachel Geringer. This week, we're exploring stories about taking care of our communities, past, present, and future. April is National Child Abuse Awareness and Prevention Month. So first, on this episode, Appalshop's own Willa Johnson brings us an interview with State Representative Angie Hatton. Hatton discusses her experiences combating child abuse in her previous role as the Assistant Letcher County Attorney, and she talks about what Kentucky legislators are doing to address child abuse at the state level this session.
My role was mainly doing the juvenile court prosecutions, which included, of course, prosecuting children who had violated the law, but also the child removals for the DNA cases, we call them, dependency, neglect, and abuse, and helping to find placement for those children who'd experienced mistreatment or neglect. And then eventually those cases would lead to terminations. And in my private practice, I would sometimes do adoptions, and I've done lots of prosecutions as well for adults who have committed abuses toward children. And in my private practice as well, I have done lots and lots of cases that involved allegations.
When we talk about abuse, what legally counts as abuse? I think sometimes we think about just physical abuse, but I'm sure there's other ways that abuse occurs.
Well, there's psychological abuse, there's sexual abuse, of course, and increasingly neglect, often as the result of drug abuse by the parents or caregivers, and that neglect can arise to criminal level, and it could become even wanton endangerment if the children are placed in danger. For instance, we've had cases where children were injured in homes where meth was being cooked.
And Kentucky has the second highest rate, I believe, in the nation of child abuse. Did this influence any of your decision to run for state legislator?
Well, everything that I was thinking about when I was making a decision to run for the state legislature involved my children and their future and the future of the kids that they're growing up with. And the things that I would see on a daily basis, especially in juvenile court, painted a pretty bleak picture of the future of Appalachia, mainly because of the drug abuse epidemic. And I increasingly felt compelled to do something about that. So I would say in that way it did affect my decision.
And since joining in Frankfort, we're closing out this year's session soon. Mm-hmm. Have there been any bills that you've seen that could impact the rate of abuse or hopefully help decrease the rate of abuse here in Kentucky?
You know, I do think that some of the things we did in the General Assembly this session will have an impact on child abuse neglect investigations, and particularly on the length of time that children stay in foster care before they're eligible for adoption. In Kentucky, we have more than double the national average for child abuse cases reported. We rank second in the nation, according to the most recent statistics, and we have 19,000 child abuse victims reported in the most recent reporting year, which I believe was 2015, which is close to 19 kids for every 1,000 children in this state. So it's something that was on the mind of the General Assembly this year as we talked about a number of things. We did a major overhaul to adoption. It was House Bill 1, and usually those higher or lower number bills indicate their importance to the General Assembly.
It's great to hear there are people on the state level who are thinking about abuse in our communities and how to lower it. If you're not a state legislator, if you're not a social worker, how would you recommend people in our community help protect our children, be on the lookout for our kids?
medical professionals, police officers, prosecutors, mental health professionals, school counselors, even teachers are under an obligation to report when they see something. And even though ordinary citizens are not under legal obligation that they're required to report, I think it's a really important idea that we change long-held traditions in this state dictate that we would allow things that are private in a family to remain private. But things have to change in order to reduce these rates in Kentucky. So I think it's really important for ordinary citizens to realize that when they see something, they should say something. And you can report anonymously to the Kentucky Child Abuse Hotline. I have the number here. It's 1-877-KY-SAFE-1. So 1-877-597-2331. That number is available on the website for Kentucky Health and Family Services Cabinet. You can just Google Kentucky Child Abuse Hotline and find that number, or you can call the local sheriff's department. You can tell a social worker, a teacher, a medical professional, or someone you know that's under an obligation to tell. And that way you don't have to feel like you're endangering yourself or putting yourself in a terrible position. But even if you're not entirely sure, if you suspect something, it's always a good idea to report that. If it was your child, you would want someone to report it. If all of us work together, we can end child abuse in Kentucky.
We just heard Willa Johnson interviewing Angie Hatton for National Child Abuse Awareness and Prevention Month. Next up, in southwestern Virginia, a group of community members has come together to register, clean up, and document histories of African American cemeteries. Tommy Anderson joined the cleanup effort at Chestnut Grove Cemetery and brings us this story.
On April 14th, 2018, I joined the Young family and a group of friends to tidy up an old cemetery in Norton, Virginia, and to learn a bit about the history of the city's south side. This documentation is part of an active restoration of the history of Southwest Virginia's Black communities and will hopefully help us remember some of the people resting at Chestnut Grove and other cemeteries like it.
My name is Terrence Young. I stay in Big Stone. I'm originally from Norton, where we're cleaning the graves, the graveyard. Basically, it was the Black cemetery for the people on the south side. I believe it was called Chestnut Grove Cemetery, I believe. But we're out here cleaning the cemetery, trying to make it look halfway decent, and I'm discovering my roots, really. Because there's a lot of graves up here I didn't know about, and a lot of names that I see that I didn't know, so I'm learning a whole lot just by cleaning the graveyard.
This was Maple Avenue, and it turned right about right in here somewhere, turned because there was a school sitting right here where the hallway is. And that was a long time ago. And they taken everything. And we should have kept that school. That's a historical school. That was the Black school where everybody graduated from. And it's gone. That's a shame. It really is.
So you didn't have all these cars driving by?
No. All that was mountain. Well, the part of the forest. Sure was. And it had a big forest. Well, it wasn't a forest, but, you know, a strip of forest separating Maple Avenue from Roberts Avenue, which is right over that berm right there. Yes, this is all mountain woods. That is the good old days. I miss it. But progress has to take its place, I guess. When I was young, I used to come and there was a big rock back there. They didn't have to come and sit. And just look over the graveyard. I felt comfortable, peaceful.
visiting with ancestors, huh?
Yeah, true.
Terrence's children were there too. Jason, Alexis, and Taryn, the eldest.
That huge evergreen tree over there, like behind the bushes right there, my dad planted that.
Wow. Say that again?
My dad planted that huge evergreen tree.
Taryn has been coordinating with others to plan cleanups at the cemetery.
All right, so I guess kind of what I want to do, I guess, is like clean off some of the graves. It's not too much trash up here. It's mostly bottles.
Taryn and her father are searching for something important at Chestnut Grove.
Where'd my daddy go? Hey, Daddy. So can you point out around where your mother would be buried?
Terrence's father died of cancer when he was 5. He lost his mother to leukemia when he was only 9. After that, he and his only sibling lived with their grandparents until, at about 16 years old, Terrence's grandparents had also passed away and been buried in Chestnut Grove.
I'm trying to figure exactly where the spot was that my mom was buried. And it's got to be on this side, about 25 yards down or something like that, if I can remember correctly.
While eating dinner with the group after the cleanup, Terrence remembered his mother most by her insistence that he read many books, which he loved to do, and he remembered how he went on to be wide receiver for Burton High School in Norton after the Southside School for Blacks closed, and before he went on to serve in the Airborne Infantry.
I mean, there's always been a lot of trees and everything in there, but it wasn't quite as bad. Well, it's not really bad now because it's springtime, but in the summer it gets really, really thick up through there. That's been so long, yeah. I just want to, you know, clean as much of the graves off as I can, and the ones that are buried under the leaves and everything, you know, just to get to see who all is really up here. I'd like to see as many people that are, you know, as up here as I can, because, like I said, my history, that's my history, right up here. From that road there all the way up was just forest. And that was basically my playground, the forest. And that's why I love it. I love the mountains. And that's why I'm still here. And that's why I came back. So I wasn't in Ohio, but my heart was here in Virginia, and especially in this part of Virginia, southwest portion of Virginia, because it was beautiful down here, and I love it. And I never want to leave it, really.
How long do you think it's going to take us to get this place cleaned up?
Well, it's going to take a while, but it's going to take a little bit. But if we can do it by the end of the summer, it'd probably be looking wonderful, I'd say, if everybody sticks in. Hangs in that long, it'll probably be looking pretty good. I think it would.
That was Tommy Anderson, bringing us audio from a volunteer cleanup day at the Chestnut Grove Cemetery. This cemetery cleanup day was organized by the Southern Appalachian Mountain Stewards, or SAMS. SAMS has a history of doing cemetery cleanup and preservation in the area. For more information about these efforts, you can contact them at samsva.org or samsva@gmail.com. Last on today's program, we bring you a conversation between Letcher County, Kentucky's own Gwen Johnson and Milman F. Harrison, a professor in the African American and African Studies Department at the University of California in Davis. Gwen and Milman sat down together during the 2017 Imagining America National Conference to discuss the importance of empathy, recognizing cycles of oppression, and remembering our common humanity.
My name is Gwen, and I'm 59 years old, and we are currently in Davis, California, at the 2017 Imagine in America National Conference. My relationship to my story buddy is newfound friend.
And I am Millman, and I am 56 years old. And yes, Gwen and I met yesterday, as a matter of fact. I was walking past, and she was sitting with someone that I know, and we just started talking, and we've been talking ever since.
Yes, we have. It's been pretty enlightening, and it's been a meeting of the minds, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What lessons has your life work taught you?
Well, it's taught me what not to do, mm-hmm. I think. Because the hurt and the oppression that I have felt personally has caused me to have a particular empathy toward anyone else that I think may be feeling oppressed. And I try to be careful not to tread upon that ground when I meet people, because it's so easy to get wrapped up in your own world and not consider someone else, because we're all in a struggle mm-hmm. of some kind. Mm-hmm. And so that old adage about walk a mile in my shoes and that we're our brother's keeper, I think that's kind of what my life lessons have taught me, is that I have to consider my brother if I'm going to be happy myself.
Yes. Yeah, that resonates with me too, for the work that I do, especially teaching about the experiences of people who are not part of the groups that I personally identify with, but to learn about various groups. I teach a class in which we learn about all the groups that came to America and the people who were here when all of us came. And the thing that I have learned is that all of us, from whichever group that we come from or identify with, know what it feels like to have our lives changed and shaped and affected by people who are more powerful than we are, and who come in and make decisions about our lives without care or without consulting us or without even an acknowledgement of the effect that it will have on us. And so those kinds of things are what I really try to get my students to understand and to really kind of connect with, that common experience of human beings, of knowing what it's like to be, again, to walk a mile in someone else's shoes who has been oppressed. We can all identify places where we have been oppressed, but we also can sometimes, I think it's important for us to also be mindful of the ways in which we have been an abuser.
Yes.
Or we've benefited from the abuse that we may not have committed personally, but we benefit from it. And to be able to see that and to own that and not try to run from it or hide it or pretend it didn't exist.
Sometimes I feel like I need to do as Nehemiah did in the scripture when he repented for his sins and the sins of his city. And that I need to repent for my sins and the sins of my people who have treaded heavily on other people. I wonder sometimes where it all ends. Mm-hmm. But I think that the repentance for the sins of our people And the fact that this nation has been built on the backs of the African Americans and the other oppressed people. I come from the coalfields of Appalachia. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of things have been built on the backs and the blood of the coal miners. Mm-hmm. And so if we can just achieve the mutual respect mm-hmm. and agree on what we can agree on and disagree on, but, you know, in the mountains we say that we fell out with somebody. Mm. Well, why couldn't we keep from falling out with people and just go on what we disagree on?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Falling out, we use that phrase too. and the part about, I think the hope that I have and what I would like to see in the world that I think is missing right now is our ability to disagree with each other's ideas, but still affirm each other's humanity and each other's right to have a different idea and still be worthy of respect. I think it's difficult because the culture we're in right now, or the way our culture has been going, and the political climate, and honestly, some of the media kind of, you know, when we're sitting here talking together, this may not be such an interesting story, but if we were in conflict, this might make the news at night. So, you know, there are lots of other forces that are shaping what's going on. But if we could take our power as human beings, as people, to say, no, I reject that impulse to dehumanize someone. No, you are not my enemy. No matter where you came from, no matter what your people did, no matter what my people did, we are not enemies. We may agree on issues, we may disagree, but we are not enemies. You are a human, I'm a human, and just on the basis of that alone, we are all worthy of respect and love. I think that's what's missing in the discourse of, or in public life today.
Being from a coal mining community, being a coal miner's daughter and a coal miner's granddaughter, and having been married to a coal miner, there's something that happens in those deep, dark reaches in that job where men become brothers, no matter what their religion is, mm-hmm. no matter what their worldview is, no matter what the color of their skin. They become brothers, mm-hmm. and because they have to have each other's backs, or they might not survive, mm-hmm. and they might not survive even if they have each other's backs. Mm-hmm. But in the present political climate, it seems to me that the dangers of being separate are much more than the dangers of being together. And I believe that there are some forces in play that want to keep us separate, who want us segregated into groups and against each other and at odds with each other because of differences of opinion, differences of color. But I think if we could think about those, this is kind of how I frame it in my mind, being from where I'm from. If there's that camaraderie and that love and that brotherhood and sisterhood, because there are ladies who are coal miners as well, mm-hmm. but if those relationships can be forged in those deep, dark, dangerous reaches, are these reaches out here any more deep and dark and dangerous in the present political climate? I think not.
Mm. Wow, that's... I love that. I love when you talked about in being in those dark spaces and they're dangerous. And I love that you're saying that, you know, in this country, in the world right now, we're in deep, dark, dangerous spaces.
We are.
And we need to help each other. We need to have each other's backs in a way that may not have been, I mean, we've always needed to do this, but maybe we need to broaden our idea of where the deep, dark, dangerous spaces are. They're not just located in this community or that community, but we're all in the bottom of a, you know, down in a mine or in a dark space like that. What you said just really also reminds me that there are forces who benefit from us being separate and who benefit from us thinking that we don't have anything in common. So it's really, I think, so important for us to again, come back to humanity, to come back to basic humanity. Because a lot of times I think about what happens if there is a catastrophic event. And I mean, this is, I watch a lot of dystopian movies and science fiction, but
I'm a doomsday prepper.
Exactly. But what happens if those things do happen? You will be left with nothing but each other, you know? And so I think the task for us is to start thinking that way to avert something that could, you know, be catastrophic that way. We can stop this runaway, this what seems like a runaway train.
And it does indeed seem like a runaway train.
Yeah.
It just really, when I see it playing out the way the media wants us to see it playing out, and I know it's dark, but when I see them trying to, it seems like they're trying to set us at odds against each other. But they're not the only ones. I think that even government sometimes profits from us being separate.
Yeah, I agree. I think about how my daughter, who is almost 17, and she could have gotten her driver's license a year ago, and she, when I asked her, you know, if she wanted to go forward with it, she said that she was afraid to drive because she didn't want to be killed by the police. And my son is 14 and very tall for his age, and he doesn't like to walk around our neighborhood because he's afraid that someone might kill him, like Trayvon Martin. And when I think about that, all I have gone through in my life to do the right things and to get an education and to put my children so that they don't have to have the kinds of experiences that I had in the 70s, and to see that we're still fighting the same battles and that my children are going through some of the same things. These are some of the things that when I think about the political climate and when I say we have to, everybody can relate to the feeling of wanting to protect your children. And I'm trying to have my children grow up and to thrive while fighting. I don't want them to wither before they've had a chance to actually grow and go out into the world. And so it's a very tricky balance right now to want to push them to do things and to experience things, basic rites of passage, like getting your driver's license or being free to walk in your neighborhood. And, you know, at the same time, being very aware that it isn't safe for them. And until it is safe for them, then we're not free. We're not free. And I'm not free. And if my children are not free, and if we're not free, then no one's free in this country. And I think that is the basic level of humanity that we can all agree on. If we can just get to that place where children don't feel free to be children or to grow up, let's start right there, you know? And I have to say, I'm really angry about that. I'm very bitter about that as a father, but I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful because we can land there. We can meet there at that space. What can we do better for our children, all of our children, you know?
I imagine a world where the children are happy.
Yeah, and a world where the children are free and where they want to grow up and be in this world.
Yes.
And they're safe. Absolutely.
That was Gwen Johnson and Milman F. Harrison, who participated in Imagining America Story Share at the 2017 Imagining America Conference. Imagining America, Artists and Scholars in Public Life, is a national consortium of academic institutions and cultural organizations based at the University of California in Davis. If you'd like to hear more conversations like these, the IA Story Share podcast will be launching in a few weeks. Imagining America can let you know when that happened. Send an email to connect@imaginingamerica.org. That's it for this episode of Mountain News and World Report. Thanks for listening to a variety of conversations focused on taking care of our communities, future, present, and past. Music on this episode comes from the June Apple recording of Marion Sumner with a tune called Oklahoma Stomp. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can visit our website at www.wmmt.org or download Mountain News wherever you get your podcasts. I've been your host, Rachel Geringer, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.